Welcome to Follow the Medical Record, where healthcare experts give insights into the increasing importance of following a patient's medical record through the health ecosystem with compliance, privacy, security, and efficiency front and center. This podcast is brought to you by MRO and hosted by Don Hardwick, Senior Vice President of Client Relations at MRO. Don has been in the health information management industry for over 40 years and has extensive knowledge of how medical records make their way through the healthcare ecosystem. At MRO, Don is responsible for strategic client engagement programs and overall client satisfaction. To hear from all of MRO's industry experts, be sure to visit mrocorp.com for additional content and to sign up for our monthly e-newsletter. Over to you, Don.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to part two of our discussion with Mark Thomas, who's MRO's Chief Technology Officer, as we follow the medical record through the many aspects of healthcare industry and its interconnection with the medical record. I'm your host, Don Hardwick, and thanks for listening today. As always, you can learn more about MRO on our website at mrocorp.com. Today is a part two of our previous discussion with Mark Thomas. So, Mark, first of all, welcome to the show. Appreciate you coming back on here for a second session.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Excited about it.
So, Mark, in the previous session, we talked about developing a culture that drives performance in a high demand area. But of course, developing a culture may be easier said than done, of course. So I do want to pick up with the application of your culture and tell us about how you've put that culture into practice since over the past year, you've had some pretty extremely aggressive achievements with your team. And part of that, of course, ties back to the development of your culture. So if you would, tell us how your culture is now being applied in this high demand area.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk about it. And to just kind of take us back to the last time a little bit to summarize, the culture that we're going for, that I believe is the culture that's aligned to today's modern architecture demand, is really a culture that's focused around being flexible, being predictable, being composable. You know, we need our architectures to be composable so that we can plug and play with other parts of the ecosystem. We need embeddable, we need available. Ultimately, our systems have got to be scalable to meet the demand growth. And then really to get the value out of them that we achieve, they've got to be user focused. And so each of those components, we break each of those components down into what we need to implement to have a culture that reflects those characteristics. And I'll hit some of the high points there. I'm not going to go into all of the details on each one because we don't have enough time today, but I'll hit some of the highlights and then we'll just kind of talk about some of the measurements that we're seeing and how it's going. So starting off with flexibility, that boils down to embracing change. And I know that's a little bit of a cliche here, but if you want to have teams and a culture that's flexible, your leaders have to exhibit the same behavior. And so one of the things we talk about is our leaders really welcome change to the environment, and we want to drive that change for the positive outcome of the business. And so we actually have our leaders be personally accountable and our teams personally accountable to challenging barriers. And ultimately, it's about taking action and just really putting one foot in front of the other and working towards common outcomes. We spend a lot of time having our leaders talk about providing trust to the teams as well. And that really drives a culture of flexibility. So then predictability is really about being data driven. All of the commitments we make, whether it's with our clients or with our partners or with the industry, or frankly, when we talk about achieving our strategic plans, we make those commitments based on data and data that's coming out of the system. And I'll talk about some of the things that we measure in a little bit, but predictability really boils down to using data to drive commitments. And then we track those delivery metrics. We track how we're doing against those data-driven commitments. And a lot of people think, you know, they'll say, oh, it's about following the rules, being predictable. It's not really. It's about being laser focused on the outcomes and being committed to the commitments that we made and making sure that they happen. So it's not necessarily about following the rules. It's more about being focused on the outcomes. And then ultimately, one of the things our leaders do is we really reward transparency. So when a team is, you know, maybe going off track, their data is saying, hey, we're not going to make a commitment that we made. We reward that. We don't want to hide that. We reward it. And we say, what are we going to do about it? We use that data to make decisions rather than, you know, trying to hide behind it. Composable is the next piece of the culture puzzle. And being composable is at the core of how we organize our team. You asked me to talk about how our team is organized, and I'll get to that in a second. But the key to that is composability and organizing our teams from a domain-driven standpoint. When I use the word domain, I mean a group of technologies that need to change together. And so we organize our teams, whether it's a product domain, an external product domain, or in some cases, we organize our teams around an internal product, like a shared service, for example. But then that way they have a common backlog that they're driving towards. And that really lends itself to being composable. When you couple that with a core part of our culture that we drive around systems thinking that we talked about last time, but systems thinking really means understanding the impact that your system or your domain has on the overall, either has on the outcome we're trying to achieve or has on the overall system. And so having personal accountability for understanding where each component fits into the whole is a real key to the puzzle here. And then ultimately this composable system and this domain-driven system becomes a self-correcting system, which is how I know that it's working. And you know, I use a phrase all the time. People serve me to say, hey, Mark, we should make this change to our release process, or hey, we should make this change to our QA process. And I love hearing those things. And 99 times out of 100, my response is great, go do that. Because they know what needs to be done better than I do. The teams that are involved, and because they have this shared vision that we have and the shared outcome, they're out there uncovering the self-improvement things that we should do. And then they're empowered to go do it, which is super important step in our process. Embeddable is the next big piece we talked about. You know, just hitting that means making sure that the components that we build can be easily connected to other environments. That's about really having, again, just high alignment across our teams, again, focused on outcome. It's also about creating a culture of collaboration and we have an example where one of our teams worked very closely with one of our clients to build an API-driven approach to data exchange. And we were constantly iterating directly with the client dev team and our dev team. I wasn't in the way. We didn't have project managers in the way. We didn't have product owners in the way. The teams were just iterating every single day to achieve the outcome. And as a result, we had a really successful pilot that's now driven towards a successful production system. And then, you know, next on the list is availability. You know, I have a phrase, you know, all hours are business hours today. So our systems have to be available all the time. And the way we really achieve that from a culture perspective is driving a culture of extreme ownership. Our teams are accountable for the stuff that they own, whether that's in production, whether that's in dev, et cetera. We've eliminated kind of the concept of handoffs where we say, well, one team does development, another team manages production. That leads to an accountability mismatch. Our teams are accountable end to end. And so they're constantly doing things to make their lives better. They're saying, hey, I don't want to sit here and do this manual process all the time to keep my system up alive. So let's build an automated process, or let's build some proactive monitoring so that we know before our clients know if we might have a particular system issue, et cetera. And so again, that's driven from a culture perspective first. It translates into a lot of technology changes, but it originates as a culture mindset of extreme ownership and that our systems need to be available. Scalability from a culture perspective. So that's really a system thing. We want our systems to be scalable. That means they got to grow with the company. They got to grow with the industry as it's growing. We don't want to ever be in a place where we say, wow, we can't bring on this new client because our system can't scale. The way we drive that from a culture standpoint is really two key things. It's building in what I call telemetry everywhere. So at every step of the development lifecycle, from dev to production, we're building out monitoring and visibility into our system. So we constantly and consistently understand their behavior, how they're performing, how increasing transactions puts pressure on the system. Where do we have those bottlenecks? And the teams have a continuous improvement mindset where they're working to build out, where they're working to drive out those things that might be bottlenecks. We also do things like focusing on feature flags. We'll build feature flags so that our teams can focus on getting features delivered and completed, but we might release them to the industry or to our end users at a different pace than the teams are running. So again, all that enables us to scale at a rate that maybe we couldn't have scaled before. User focus is really the last component of that kind of demand of what modern architecture really is. And so how we drive that from a culture perspective, first and foremost, is routine inspection. What that means is every single sprint. Some teams are on 1 week sprints, some teams are on 2 week sprints. We really don't encourage anything longer than that, but every single sprint, we're getting feedback from our stakeholders. And in some cases, that's directly from our end users on how the software is performing. How do they like what we built? We can't be user focused unless we're asking our users, how do they like what we built? Does it make their lives better? Do we need to change it? And so being able to do that on a very, very regular basis is incredibly powerful. The other thing we drive from a culture perspective that enables, I believe, user focus is teaching our technology teams to do what I call speak the language of the business. That's, again, that's a little bit of a cliche, but it's meaningful from the standpoint that we want to speak to our users. We want to speak to our stakeholders in their language, not in bits and bytes. I don't want my software developers talking about the specifics of some software language or some system, underlying infrastructure system, because that doesn't mean anything to them. We want to be speaking to our users in a language that means something to them. And then we'll translate that back into what that means from a technology standpoint. So we really drive that from the ground up. Every single one of our developers speak the language of the business, and it's a really important step. And so once we work to put that culture in place, how do we know it's happening? Well, we measure in really three big areas. First, we do measure our culture, and I'll talk about that in a minute. We also measure our predictability and how we're delivering. And then the last piece of the puzzle is we measure our talent and how our talent is aligned. And so how we measure our culture is through an instrument we call Westrum Culture Survey. I'm not going to go into all the details here. I would be happy to chat with anyone that wants to chat about that. But it's an instrument we use, and we do it on a quarterly basis. And we just say, how are we doing? Are we achieving the culture that we want to achieve? And we have numbers. We look at those results, and we take action based on those results. Predictability is really about delivery predictability. So we have a core set of metrics that each one of our teams uses to measure. Number one is cycle time. Cycle time for us is the definition of when something gets pulled in to our backlog and is ready to be developed against. In other words, the idea is well developed and understood, and then versus when it gets released. And so this is not a team-to-team competition, because one team might have a very different cycle time than another team for good business reasons. It's more about a continuous improvement story. We want to see our teams tracking their own cycle time. How are we getting better? The same thing with there's a common, you know, Scrum metric called velocity. That's a measure of story points and how many story points a team gets done in a sprint. Again, it's irrelevant across teams because everybody's definition of a story point is different. But what is important is that a team over time is cognizant of their own velocity. We use that velocity to predict when things are going to get delivered. That's at the core of predictability for us. And again, we're measuring that across all of our teams. The goal there, I want to caution the group. This is one of those things everybody wants to jump in super quick. Your goal here is really data over time. We will set a limit and say, yeah, we're not going to make decisions until we're three or four sprints in, because sprint number one, the numbers may look great. And then all of a sudden we're predicting we're going to get things done maybe faster than we will. It's very cyclical when teams get started. They do some things really well, then they have a sprint or two where they're really slow. But over time, that number, that velocity number starts to settle down. And once it starts to settle down and kind of get within a bounds, I'll try not to go too much into the math here, but that's when you can really start to drive predictability. And at that point, again, we measure it over time. That's the point when we start to make delivery predictions and say, we're going to have this new feature ready by Q2, and we can stand behind it because our data is saying that we're going to get it done by then. The last piece of the puzzle here is skills. One of the most important things that we measure around talent is, what are our teams really skilled at and what are they interested in? One of the things I found over years of doing this, that someone might be skilled in something, but if they're not interested in working on that technology, then it doesn't go well. You want to have both people that are skilled and are interested in working with what they're doing. And we've actually found that their interest in what they're working on is a better correlation of success than skills. Because people that are interested in working on something will actually learn the skills they need. And so an example that I'm talking about here is maybe microservices architecture, which is, you know, a modern software term. Not everybody learns that, right? Because they haven't been a part of that. But if they're super interested in learning it, then we see that they're very successful. Others that are, we might find that say, I'm not interested in learning that, or I know it, but I'm not interested in doing microservices, they're not as successful. So one of the things we do, we measure both skills and interest, and we use that data to make sure we have people aligned to technologies and to the different components in our architecture that make sense to them. And it is a really unlocking factor. And an example of that is we purpose built a team over the last year to really focus on building out the foundation of our new clinical data exchange platform. And the beginning of that platform really needed to focus on external API connectivity. Ultimately, it is serving as the connectivity engine across all of our products. Obviously, you know, it takes a while to build that up, but we went by purpose building that team. We went from idea to functioning in production. And we are literally working this month on processing hundreds of thousands of transactions through this platform in less than 12 months, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. We went from PowerPoint idea and design to in production in less than 12 months, again, because we purposely built a team that was interested in working on that type of technology, that had the skills to do it, and we surrounded them with the culture to enable them to do it. And it's really become a game changer for MRO. The same thing is happening as we're working to digitize our business in other areas, not just in how we exchange clinical records, but how we retrieve those clinical records. We're seeing some of the same improvements. And another example in one area of our business that I'll just share, that we did nothing but change the culture of this team. We had some teams that were performing, and in 2022, they had roughly 50 releases to production. 25 of those releases to production had issues, and we had to rally and fix them so that our end users wouldn't feel the result of those errors. In 2023, that same team had 190 releases, and only 3 of those had issues. So just by changing the culture and how that team operated, we were able to, I don't know, you can do the math for me, Don, but I think we multiplied their productivity by 250% or something like that, and improved their quality by 1,000%. That's more than that. That's not even, I should probably do the math so that I know it, but it's an enormous amount. And then you can imagine that, you know, that's very powerful to MRO, yes, but it's more powerful to our clients, because what that means is they're getting more value from MRO faster as this industry continues to evolve and change. And it really allows us to meet our clients where they are and adjust to their needs at the rate that they need us to adjust. We're super excited about the results we're seeing out of this process. A couple of just tidbits, having, you know, gone through this many times, I'll just share that, you know, for those of you thinking about, you want to kind of take on this tech culture journey, there's some things that I, you know, to keep in mind. Number one, this concept of transparency that we drive, unprecedented transparency makes people uncomfortable. I think that's good. It's usually uncomfortable in a good way, right? But it does sometimes makes people uncomfortable. You discover things that maybe are a hard pill to swallow. But what that does is it gives your leaders something to really focus on and make better. A self-correcting system takes time to correct. So you got to give it that space to correct. If you choke out the concept of self-correcting and don't allow it to happen, you actually kind of kill this culture transformation. I will just say A players and strong talent in the right places make or break this transformation, because it's just like any other change management exercise. People resist change naturally. It's just what humans do. And so you've got to have champions in all the right places of the organization that continue to drive the transformation in the day-to-day and are the constant drumbeat. So it's really important. And so that's why it's deliberate. You have to be deliberate in where you kind of put your change agents in the organization. We talked about doing deliberate talent management. I can't say enough things about that. It is the number one key to unlocking this transformation from my perspective is the concept of measuring talent and being very deliberate about it. I use the word aligned autonomy. A lot of what I talk about in this culture change is allowing our teams to be very autonomous. Well, in order to get autonomy, you have to prove alignment is the way that we think about it. So we got to all know that we're going in the same direction in order to get that autonomy. And so I spend a ton of time focusing on alignment and making sure we all understand where we're going and let the teams worry about how we're going to get there. One of my favorite part about this journey is transforming technology ultimately transforms the entire business, because if we transform, it really changes the way that our stakeholders interact with us in a very positive way. And it's super fun to see. In the end, I will say, though, you got to stay the course because it gets tough. There are times where my peers will be like, oh, it's not happening fast enough, Mark, or we're not seeing it happen fast enough. And you just got to know you got to stay the course, because if we stop the journey too early, we won't get actually what we're trying to achieve. So anyway, it's been a super fun journey here at MRO. Our journey is not done yet. We've got lots that we continue to routinely improve on and lots to focus on, but this is a completely different organization than it was a couple of years ago, and it's been a lot of fun to be a part of.
So, Mark, I just got a couple questions here. You're talking about your teams and how they self-correct. In the project that you mentioned a few minutes ago, your data exchange, clinical data exchange, for our listeners, I would like for you to explain a little bit of exactly how that clinical data exchange functions. And number two is, did you have any people within that team that decided part the way through, hey, this is not the team for me? How do you monitor that so that you do constantly have, you know, people in the right positions here or on the right teams and still not lose continuity of the project?
Well, that is a great question. Let me take the second half of that question first, and then I'll come back to kind of explain a little bit more about what CDXP is doing for us and the work that we did with our client. So it starts with creating a role in technology that doesn't exist in a lot of technology organizations, honestly, and we call it talent management. We have people in our organization whose job is to be talent managers, and their only job is to make sure that the right talent is on the right team, and they are the stewards of our technical excellence and our culture. This is a change in mindset from traditional management. Traditional management is a manager leads a team, they manage their day-to-day work, and they manage the talent in the team. We're splitting that because the day-to-day work comes through the Scrum process. It comes through the prioritization process. So I don't need to have managers that are sitting around telling people what to do. The system tells people what to do. The teams tell people what to do. So now I can have talent managers whose only job is to focus on culture and talent. And so where we have mismatches, Don, in this particular instance, we didn't have a mismatch because we purpose built the two teams that are working on CDXP. So they knew what they were getting into to begin with. We didn't have any mismatches, but what we have done is because they were so successful, we've pulled some folks out of those teams and placed them in other teams and rotated people in. And we've used this as kind of a proving ground to show what great looks like from how a team operates. And so we're using it like a training ground for the rest of the org. And then we've taken those people and sprinkled them out through the rest of the organization, and we're seeing the transformation occur in other places. So while we didn't have anybody self-select out, we very purposely, as this went along, said, okay, we're going to take, you know, this developer and put them over here in this other domain so that they can help demonstrate what good looks like for this other team that's now beginning that journey. Because you can't do this all at once. The way that this works is you pick an area, you focus on it, you get it done, and then you move to the next area. I've tried to do it big bang, do it all at once, and it is not, it's too hard. It's too much of a stretch for your leadership team. So in other areas of the business, I'll be honest, we've had some folks self-select out. We've moved folks to other areas of the org very successfully, and they're very happy, and that's awesome. No problem. There's a place for everyone. Not everybody likes this, you know, like I said, unprecedented transparency makes people uncomfortable, right? Not everybody. It's not for everybody, and that's okay. We make that kind of known in the beginning. So back to the first half of your question. The cool thing about our pilot there with CDXP is we are successfully taking in via API requests, large volume requests for records into MRO, where we are automatically getting those requests organized in our systems, matched to facilities, all the things that we have traditionally done behind the scenes in a manual way, in a very automated way, so that we've gone from, for example, getting these requests ready to fulfill, we've gone from it taking us, you know, numbers of days in the past to minutes and seconds today, because we're doing things in an automated way. Now, again, there's still lots of parts of our workflow that are not automated that we're working through and building out automation and so forth, but it is a giant success just to start to peel off pieces of this. And it's so successful that the client that we've been working with here is like, we want to send you hundreds of times more than what we're sending you today. The POC was so successful, literally, they went from saying, let's do 2,000 to let's do 800,000 kind of a number, which is a testament again to the team. They're so excited with how the team interaction worked and kind of working as a development group with MRO. It has been super successful.
Awesome. I know that your team has just been extraordinarily successful in the development of that product and other products that we're using as tools in our industry. And it's really, really exciting to see what's happened. And the core of it, again, is how you're developing that talent and then the application of that talent based on the culture that you're trying to drive. For the first time, I mean, I see it in the organization as a hugely successful factor in the success of MRO. And so congratulations on it. You've taken something from concept to production, and it's sometimes you wonder if it's going to work or not, and this actually is. So congratulations there, Mark. I know you're very pleased with the outcome.
Yeah, thank you. And one of the cool side benefits is my and again, I'm very biased to this approach, obviously, because it's kind of what I do. But we hear from our teams all the time, this is a fun environment to be a part of. Those that really love the transparency and accountability have a ton of fun because they're focusing on business outcomes. One of the number one things that'll kill the incentive of a software development team is for them to build software that never does anything. It's called shelfware, right? They spend 6 months building something and it sits on a shelf. Well, our teams are seeing their software come to life every week or every 2 weeks. So all that does is pour fuel on their fire, and they want to do more and more and more. It really creates, and that's at the core of this self-correcting system.
Well, Mark, I really do appreciate you taking the time. I know you're super busy and speaking on this topic, and especially coming back for a second round of it. Thanks a lot. I do appreciate your being involved here and joining the show. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anytime.
So for more insights on a patient's medical record, visit the show's page at mrocorp.com. And be sure to explore additional resources and thought leadership on our website. Please check out our program on healthcarenowradio.com. And finally, be sure to connect with us on Twitter at MROCORP. Until we meet again, I'm your host, Don Hardwick.